Up in the morning and in the field, breaking my back just to pay my bills. Loving what I do till the day I'm dead. I'll be working on my old homestead.
Welcome back, folks. This is Lloyd Creech II.
Paul McDaniel.
And you're listening to Radio Hour with EKH on 104.9 FM, WSKV, out of Stanton, Kentucky. Hope everybody's having a great, wonderful fall weekend.
Oh, it's nice.
It's supposed to be cool Saturday morning, Sunday morning.
I got a new quilt.
Do you?
Yeah. Found it in a trash can.
Somebody
throwed it out. Their little boy had pooped on it.
And so you just went home and washed it?
No, I ain't washed it.
No.
I said, you know, if my mother had thrown away everything us three boys pooped and peed on when we was little, we wouldn't have had a bed to sleep in. We wouldn't have had clothes to wear.
yeah, that's true. Yeah. And stuff. But hope everybody's having a great and wonderful weekend and stuff. It's supposed to be cool Saturday morning. I don't know. We're doing this Friday night, and it's beautiful out there.
Yeah. Well, it's going to drop now that the sky's clearing, and they said the heat's just going to go to pouring off the ground. So it's going to.
And so Sunday morning's supposed to be even cooler. So we're probably going to get our first good frost this weekend and stuff. But, you know, it's what, October 7th, October 8th, something like that. And so, you know, it's about that time, so.
Well, I'm going to start using Tootie Banks' old cooking stove here soon.
The old wood stove.
The little burning cooking stove I bought last year.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Well, I had one little fire in it this year, and I did cook supper on it, and it does real good. The only thing is, when I bought that stove off of that lady over there in Beattyville, I never did get her chili recipe. She said it cooked real good chili.
Well, any chili recipe is good.
Yeah, I guess so. But
stuff. I know we've already had our first pot of chili the other day. You know, as soon as the temperature drops below, you know, 60 degrees in the afternoon, Teresa's like, "Hey, it's time for chili." I'm like, "Oh, great." And stuff. But luckily for us and stuff, we only fix it about once ever. I don't know, 3 weeks or 4 weeks or something other and stuff. Chili is not my favorite food and stuff. I'm more of a steak and hamburger, but the steaks are super expensive right now.
Yeah.
So.
Well, don't you grow steak?
I do grow steak, but I don't kill steak.
Oh.
And stuff. Even though I love homesteading, I love farming, I love anything to do with any of that, there are certain, you can't eat that much beef by yourself.
No.
And so
I'm not a real heavy beef eater anyway. I kind of like pork
and stuff. So, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day. They kill one hog a year, they kill one cow a year, they kill a bunch of chickens every year and stuff, and you know, that's great, but they also have a large family that they can do that with. Me, on the other hand, stuff, one, I don't have nowhere to store it and stuff. I don't have a deep freeze. Don't have room for a deep freeze anywhere. And two, Teresa, if you don't buy it supermarket and stuff, probably not going to be eating. stuff. Even though it's the same meat, it's better meat and stuff, because my cattle are 100% grass-fed and stuff, except for the one time a year, which lasts about 2 weeks, where I bring in pellets to get them up in the work lot so I can work them. And other than that, they're 99% grass fed, so they'd be a really good beef and everything.
Well, now for years I'd raise a hog every year, you know, and I didn't raise a great big one. I'd just raise one. I'd kill it in the fall, and I'd have a party, you know, and we'd eat some of it, and I'd put some of it away.
Yeah.
But I'd make a pet out of it every year, and then I couldn't kill it, and I'd have to get somebody else to come kill it for me. Of course, after it was killed, I'd go ahead and eat it, you know. But I make pets out of everything.
Don't ever give it a name. No. And stuff. It reminds me of a story back about 10 or 12 years ago stuff. I was going camping up around Blue Licks there, and it had probably been longer, it had probably been 15 years ago. And so I went up there to set my camper up, and I was camping by myself. So yeah, that had to be about 15 years. And this guy comes over to me. I knew him. He was my cousin's wife's uncle.
No, don't say that real
no
fast.
No lineage to me. And he goes, "So what are you going to be doing the rest of the afternoon?" I said, well, there's a camper here and there's a lake behind me. I'm probably going to go fishing. And he says, well, shucks. And I was like, what's wrong? He says, well, I need some help. He said, you know, I'm up in my years and everything, and this Amish guy up the road here, he needs help cutting his horse. And I'm like, now, excuse me, hold on. What did you just, an Amish man needs help cutting a horse. Now, these people, I would have thought, would have known how to cut their own horse.
Yeah, absolutely.
And stuff. But he says, no, he said, they don't know how to do that and stuff. So I was like, okay, I'll go with you. And so we go up to this farm up in Flemingsburg somewhere, up on the other side of Flemingsburg. We find this farmer, okay? He's out on a Bobcat compact tractor and stuff. And he's using a bush hog, you know, this big old bush hog. All right. And I'm like, wait a minute. He's Amish, but he's running a Bobcat.
And he can't cut a horse.
And he can't cut a horse. So... I'm sitting there talking to him, and he's since moved on to Indiana, so I know he can't hear me. But I'm like, so how are you able to run a Bobcat? And because you still got to drive it. And he says, yeah, but a Bobcat don't have a steering wheel.
Oh, no.
Oh, okay. So if you got control arms, you can drive it, but if you got a steering wheel, you can't drive it. All right, makes perfect good sense to me now. And big, nice bush hog out in front. Everything cost, you know, way, way up there, probably $70,000 for all of it. And then I said, here's my second question. So you can drive that, but you can't cut that. He goes, yep, you got it. Okay. So we take this big old horse, and we drug him and stuff. Well, the guy that I was helping and stuff had all the medicine and stuff there to shoot him. So we shoot him, put him on the ground, and go in there and do, you know, cut him open and stuff, get his balls out, tie him up, you know, cut the balls off, go get him to the dog, you know, and spray the stuff in there, make sure everything, you know, antiseptic and all that, so he ain't going to get no fungus or nothing in there. And then we give him the drug to bring him back, and you know, 20 minutes later, the horse comes back too, and he's back up, and oh, he's mad, you know, now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'd be mad too.
And, but during this whole process and stuff, so I'm helping the guy that I went with, and the Amish guy that, you know, we're doing this for and stuff, he's over here puking. I'm like, what are you doing? He says, I cannot stand to cut horses and stuff like that. He said, that's why I have to have somebody else do it. And I'm like, I don't understand this. I do not. This is like your all's way of life and stuff. The horse people of the bluegrass,
mm-hmm.
and you have to have us come in and cut your horse.
I was raised in Pennsylvania, and I wasn't too far from the Amish, and I had some Amish ancestry in me. And them people, you know, when it comes to livestock, they knew what they were doing.
Yes.
I had an Amish guy, and he indirectly, he showed me how to get a mule up. If a mule sat down and didn't want to get up,
uh-huh.
I was watching him one time when I was a little boy, and he was plowing. And his mule sat down in the field. It wouldn't get up.
Yeah.
So he took a bunch of old brushy grass. He set a fire underneath that mule's ass, and that mule got up and went to plowing. Well, years and years later, I was up in Virginia, and a buddy of mine had a mule. Then he asked me if I'd keep it for him. I had a place up there I was staying on, and I said, sure. And I went to riding towards town. Well, that mule had a shoe that was trying to come loose. Uh-huh. Well, that old mule would not let you take that shoe off or fix it. It was just ornery old mule.
Yeah.
So I was riding it into Lovettsville, Virginia there. I was going into a little store there. We come off the old gravel road. I come off the old gravel road, and it hit pavement. Well, that mule wasn't going to get on that pavement.
Uh-huh.
And so it just leaned back into a bank, a real high bank, and it wouldn't go home. It wouldn't go anywhere. And I got to thinking about what that I seen that Amishman do. And I had a pack of matches in my pocket. And I let that whole book of matches held around about that mule's tail. Well, that mule trotted all the way into the Lovettsville, and he throwed that shoe going in.
Oh, okay.
So I you know, I got the mule up, and I got the shoe off, too.
But, and stuff. But, you know, I was up there working with that Amish guy and stuff, so I'm like, you just bum puzzled me here, you know. Here I thinking, you know, this is the way of life and everything. Mm-hmm. You know, God and
well, Amish is different now than they used to be.
And work, and you know, their work ethic is bar none. You know, and you know, all this and stuff, but here we are cutting your horse out.
Well, you know, I'm working up in Millersburg, Kentucky right now. It's just outside of Paris there. And I come through Paris the other day around through there, and there's a Hardee's, and there was a bunch of Amish standing around the Hardee's there, smoking cigarettes, talking on cell phones, and eating Hardee burgers. And I go, well, no, wait a minute. You know, their grandpas would be rolling in the grave now if they've seen that.
Yeah, that's definitely true there.
Yeah.
But since you brought Millersburg up and stuff, Paul's been working on a Howard house.
The house is built in 1757. It's called a 2/2. And what they mean by that is it's a full two-story log house. And it had two rooms upstairs, two rooms downstairs. And this has got two rooms in the cellar.
Oh, really?
And it's the oldest standing 2/2 in Bourbon County.
Oh, that's cool. This house
is as old as it is, it's in mint condition. And we're doing stone restoration right now. Well, we're getting ready to chink it, and got the logs all cleaned up. But the guy that owns it, he's from Australia, and he's wanting to pretty much restore the house.
Yeah.
The only modern stuff that's going to be in it is going to have basic wiring, and it's going to have a modern kitchen and a modern bathroom.
Yeah.
You know, but the house is just beautiful.
So it's just going to be a four-room house or a six-room
house? Well, no, the interior walls have been took out. They weren't log walls. So it's just one big room upstairs and one big room downstairs, and there's still two rock rooms in the cellar.
Okay.
But now it's actually closer to a three-story house because it's got a loft in it.
Oh, really?
Big enough to stand up in.
Huh.
But all the original rafters are there, and they're all pegged together, wooden pegs, and it's just it's turned out to be a beautiful house. And
I know you've sent me one picture of it already and stuff. It is. It's one of the nicest log homes, original log homes I've ever
seen. Well, knowing that it's big, it's 18 by 28 feet.
Wow.
That's
big for a home.
Well, it was Scottish built. Campbell's built it back in 1757. And it's my understanding that they had their indentured servants they brought over from Scotland with them, a couple, and they lived in the cellar, and there's a fireplace in the cellar.
Oh, cool.
So that's where they did all their cooking,
you
know, and brought everything up. And we're just finding so many little details about this old house that are just really, really cool. But we got the one fireplace working, and every morning I get there, first one there. I have the furthest distance to travel, and I'm always there an hour before anybody else shows up. But I build a fire.
Yeah.
That way, when everybody else shows up, they can run in there and get warm, you see. Usually by then, I'm out back laying rock. But
Stuff. So you're redoing the foundation. You're redoing the chimney work.
Yeah. And there's a well. Now, this well is amazing. It's 6 foot across. It's 26 foot deep. And it's only laid up with rock about 8 foot down, and the rest had been quarried through solid limestone down to where they hit the vein of water. And for them to know back then that there was water down there, to have to bust through all that rock, probably use black powder, and to get down in there, and you could see the water just coming in. As dry as it is right now, it's just you can watch the water come in. So I've got to lay that rock back up on the top, you know, and build it back up, and... Quite a bit of work there yet. I'll be there until freezing winter.
Really?
Yeah. But it's not going to get done this year. You know, probably about the middle of summer next year, it should be
livable,
ready to camp out.
Or dried in.
You're ready to camp out in anyway.
Yeah. So that's cool and stuff. I did the math. It's 266 years old.
Yeah. Well, it got remodeled in 1860.
Oh, okay.
And we put the first fire in that fireplace. Has been in there for 160 years.
So that's cool.
Because they covered the fireplace up when they remodeled it. They run a new staircase down.
Oh.
And I had to take that staircase.
Well, I was wondering, because you'd sent me pictures of it, and you told me that you had to change the balusters.
I had to take the staircase and move it from in front of the fireplace and just swing it around. Well, I took the whole thing apart completely. And it's got walnut banisters and everything, and I've got all that in my shop. I cleaned all it up. But I put the railing on the opposite side of the treads.
Oh, okay.
Well, that was all dovetailed in, all the spindles and everything down through there. And luckily, the way their ash treads, the way they made them, they beveled the front, completely beveled, so I was able to flip them over.
Okay.
But the bottom side, they were notched out by a hatchet so they'd fit on the risers, and I had to take them home and run them through the planer.
Oh, man.
And but I've got them all looking good, and... But that's going to be the last thing to go back in that house, because we can't be stomping up and down that staircase now until everything is pretty much clean. But now next week, we're probably going to start mudding in the chinking.
Oh, that's cool.
We got most of the mesh in and the insulation
Are you going to actually use chink, or are you going to just use the mortar?
I'm using type S mortar.
Yeah.
You know, it's a stucco mortar, mm-hmm. and you can put it on in thinner layers without it cracking up. And, you know, the term chink was, you know, back in the day, they used what was most available.
Uh-huh.
The chinks were either pieces of wood uh-huh. stacked up at an angle through there and then just mudded over whatever mud material they had,
uh-huh.
or they used pieces of rock.
Uh-huh.
Now, the chinks that were in this house were cut limestones to fit
the gap, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
and
awesome.
Then they mudded it, and it was a job getting them out. You know.
And so are you going to put that back in there?
No. We're using diamond mesh wire.
Yeah.
You know, stucco wire, and we use shingle nails, and you cut strips, and you set it back in there.
Uh-huh.
And you got to leave it back in a half inch at least, you know, top and bottom, mm-hmm. so it doesn't show when you put your mortar in.
Yeah.
And then you put fiberglass insulation in behind, unfaced insulation, and then you put the wire mesh inside and out, you know, and then you start your mudding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's
that's really cool stuff. I was looking up on Lowe's.com the other day and stuff, because there's a project going on right now. It's not mine, somebody else's stuff. And I was just wondering, I cannot stand fiberglass insulation. It absolutely eats me alive.
Oh, it does everybody.
And
it stinks.
Yeah, it stinks. It gets all over everything. You breathe it in and everything if you don't have the proper mask on and everything. Mm. And I could do it on Saturday, and on Thursday of the next week, I still be itching and stuff. I don't know what it is.
You got to handle it very gently. You just can't get in and slam it around
and stuff. So they've come out with, you can get this new stuff, or it's not new. It's been out for, you know, umpteen years and stuff. It's called Rockwool and stuff. It's fiberglass free. And it don't do as well as insulation and stuff as the R factor, but it is just, I think it's just as good and stuff. Insulation's what, R13, R12?
R19, they got different R's on it.
Yeah, different R's and stuff. And the stuff I was looking at the other day was R12 to R15. And just depends on how smashed you want it and stuff. You know, a 2x4 wall, it's pretty smashed. A 2x6 wall, though.
The thing with fiberglass or any kind of insulation is you don't want to compress it too tight in there. Because you ruin the insulation. You know, people don't understand it, that fiber, what it's doing is just trapping air.
Uh-huh.
And that air heats up, you know, and that's got a vapor barrier of some kind, so the wind doesn't blow through it.
Yeah.
And once that air is heated up, then that's your insulation. Uh-huh. If you put it in there compressed real tight, you don't have that air to absorb the heat.
Uh-huh.
So it's just like having a piece of plywood up there. It's going to get cold.
And so I was looking at this cabin that we're working on. I'll just say cabin right now. It's an outbuilding. And we're going to put the insulation in the walls and then put plywood up over top of that instead of drywall, because it's going to be outside. Don't want to draw moisture. And then we're going to put a vapor barrier between the insulation and the plywood, supposedly. And so I was looking at this installation online, and it has all great reviews, and it don't have no fiberglass in it, which is a score for me and stuff. I cannot stand fiberglass. and it was not really that much more expensive than fiberglass. You know, you're only talking a dollar or two and stuff, but it's called Rockwool.
Yeah,
I've heard of it. They mainly do ceilings with it. And so I was talking to a friend of mine and stuff and telling them about it and stuff, and that's what I would go with if I was doing it.
Well, you know, you came by my house a few summers back when uh-huh. I was blowing extra insulation into uh-huh. the ceiling back part of my house, and that stuff, just old rags and everything in the world. But I got to looking through some of them bags, and I found pieces of plastic shopping bag,
uh-huh.
you know, just whatever they can grind up, you know. But that stuff's really nasty. I believe they put formaldehyde in it for a preservative, but I had crawled back in there, that tight hole where I was blowing it in there, just took a rake and fed it out, and I didn't think I was coming back out. It started choking me.
We did the store like that. We did the blown newspapers, the crumpled newspaper, and they put formaldehyde in it and everything as preservative and stuff, because heat and newspapers won't last long.
So any of that material, I'm sure, would, you know, decompose if it didn't have.
And so I was reading an article about it one time on here, and you know, that's an excellent, now that it's got this chemical on there and stuff, it lasts a lot longer and it don't compact as much and stuff. It can get air holes and stuff in it. But when this stuff was coming out, I remember when I lived over in Lexington when I was going to college over there, and they said, hey guys, we got, you know, you're all a engineering class and stuff, we want to show you this piece of wood. And so they brought this piece of wood in there, and it was, I mean, it looked like it been, they said it was from a truss up in an apartment complex. Apartment complex has been there about 60 years at this point. And they said, look at it, of how deteriorate. It held its shape, but, I mean, literally, you could take it and it just...
Crush
it into powder and stuff. And we're like, you know, what caused this? They said, back in the 70s or 80s, I think it was, I think it was the 80s, they came out with this chemical that you could spray all your trusses and your joist and your studs and everything. That was supposed to make them last forever.
Like pentachlorophenol or...
And stuff, something like that. And so they
caused cancer too.
Yeah. And so they sprayed all the trusses, all the studs, all the joist. Well, one test they did not run was the heat of the attic and stuff. I don't know how hot it gets in an attic. I know it's really hot. You don't want to be up there.
Well, if they're sealed tight, no ventilation, you know.
Yeah, no ventilation, no whirly birds or nothing like that. And so this chemical, over time, it took it about 20-some years with no vented attic and stuff. The trusses held their shape, but literally you could crumble them and stuff because they
just had a chemical reaction.
Yeah, just had a chemical reaction with the wood.
Oh, yeah.
And 25 years of excessive heat and stuff, and this chemical just dry rotted pretty much the wood.
Well, no, I think they outlawed it somewhere in the late 70s and early 80s. I knew a couple back in the early 70s, they built a little log cabin, and they soaked the whole house down with it.
Uh-huh.
Everybody said that's what you use, but she ended up miscarrying every child. They,
oh really?
She was never able to have a baby after that. So they finally, I used it one time.
Uh-huh.
You know, in the crawl space underneath Susan's house, the big log house there.
Uh-huh.
You know, and once I found out about it, you know, I said, no more. I'm not buying no more of it.
Yeah.
But you're talking about fiberglass insulation bothering you. There's a little trick to that. Put it in cold weather.
Why?
Well, because if you're sweating, your pores are open, and it sticks in you.
No.
If it's cold weather and your pores are all tight, and you know, you're not as sweaty, it's not sticking to you.
I even wear coveralls when I'm doing the stuff.
Well, sometimes that's even worse because it gets stuck in the fiber, and then it just itching you all over. No, there's no easy way.
There's no easy way for
you can't slam it around, though. You just got to take your time and do it real easy. And
so I that's why I was getting with the rock wool, no insulation or no fiberglass in it.
Yeah.
And may cost a dollar or two higher per bag, but it's well worth it.
Well, the term fiberglass, that's what it is, fiberglass.
Uh-huh. You know? And fiberglass, any kind of fiberglass eats me up, so.
Yeah.
And stuff. It gets in me, and that's it.
Well, I'm pretty fortunate right now, the job I'm on now, the crew there, they're doing it in between the chinking, you know.
No, so you got Jason and his crew.
Yeah, I'm actually being an instructor.
And stuff. Well, I mean, as much knowledge as you have, especially with these old log homes and stuff, you've been doing this
over 50 years.
Yeah, so you got over 50 years experience with log homes and everything.
Don't look at mine.
And, yeah, you're always working on somebody else's.
Yeah.
He's been building a chimney for 16 years now. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to decide whether I should lay bricks tomorrow on that chimney. I got everything up there. All I have to do is get the mud up here. I fixed up a pulley system now where I can pull things up. And I'm going, now, I haven't had any time to do anything. And I go, well, it's going to be kind of nice tomorrow. It'll be cool, but nice.
Yeah.
And so, now, do I lay bricks or do I cut firewood?
So you're talking about being a little cooler tomorrow. I think tomorrow will be my first day in long sleeves and stuff. Up to this point and stuff, I wear a sweatshirt. Between the time I open the store And about 10 o'clock, and after 10 o'clock, I peel that sweatshirt off. But tomorrow, I think I may just go with the long sleeves all day.
Well, when I get to the job, you know, I'm kind of bundled up a little bit. But as soon as I get out of the truck, I start working.
Mm-hmm.
And it don't take me. I got all that Celtic blood in me, you know, and I start warming up. But now I've just now started wearing long pants again. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I'm doing that is because I'm crawling around on my hands and knees in that old rough dirt around that house. And, mm-hmm. you know, and so...
But I forgot where we was going with this.
Don't look at me.
I completely lost my.
Well, we was talking about the weather.
Oh, the cutting wood or the thing. Let's see here. Tomorrow's only supposed to be a high of 60, and it's going to be beautiful and sunny.
Yeah, but if it freezes tomorrow night, then I do that. Mortar on them bricks and stuff. Of course, there'd be a fire in the chimney. Let's see. I can't get out of this one.
No. So you're cutting wood tomorrow is what it sounds like.
Well, I got to go to town first thing in the morning. And when I get back from town, I will make a decision. I figure if I went ahead and just cut the trees down.
Yeah.
And then I'd warm up enough by then, I could mix up some mud and get up there and lay about 50 bricks, and then, you know.
Then get down and cut you some firewood that way.
So. Yeah, and then I can put off bricklaying again for another little while.
And so how much more do you got on this chimney to go? I mean.
6 foot.
You got 6 more feet to go?
Well, the chimney is almost 40 foot tall. You know, Lloyd, I'm 71 years old next Monday. I have to get up there. I have to get the bricks up there. I have to get the mortar up there. And once I'm up there, I have to stay up there, not come tumbling off. Well, it's not as easy as it used to be, Lloyd.
I'm saying you got you a elevator made. Won't you just put you some weight on one end, build you a seat on the other, and just rope yourself up
there? Yeah, right.
You don't trust your own elevation.
Absolutely
skills.
Not.
And so you're going to trust Rock on there, but you're not going to trust yourself.
Huh? Well, I don't know if I'm going to trust Rock. I thought about just tying the rope to the riding lawnmower and pull everything up there with it. Now I'll get it done. But, you know, I've only got $3 of scaffolding, and I'm still going to be liking about 2 foot of height. And I figure I'm going to have to get the rest off a stepladder once I get up there.
Oh, that's even fun. So now you're putting a stepladder on top of all this scaffolding.
Hey, I can still do it. I just don't do it as fast as I used to.
Oh, so but you're 71 years old and you can't make it to the top, but you're supposed to get up there on the stepladder on top of the scaffolding.
Mm-hmm.
I say, yeah, you have fun with that. Don't call me if you fall.
Well, I don't get much phone service down there anyway. Lloyd shows up some of the strangest times when I talking about blowing that insulation in the upstairs of my house. I had my old ton flatbed truck out there, and I had all these bundles of insulation, and had the blower out there, and I'd have to come down, dump a bundle in the hopper, climb back up the ladder. I said, boy, it'd be nice if somebody showed up. And about that time, I had that thought, here comes Lloyd. Well, I thought I'd come see what you're doing. He jumped right on the back of the truck, and then it made it. I said, perfect timing.
Yeah, it was. It was perfect
timing. But, it's funny. He doesn't show up on the days I'm laying brick.
I don't, you know, I told you this about through. I have never, ever laid brick, block, rock.
Well, come around tomorrow, Lloyd. Come around some around time.
And I've already got my help promised elsewhere.
Okay, all right.
Shiplap siding.
Yeah, I see. I understand.
Stuff.
Yeah.
We got to take shiplap off one side to just go back and re-shiplap it with something else and stuff. So once John gets his little project done, then I'll come over and see you.
Yeah, I use those kind of excuses myself, you know.
But I would love. That's one thing I'd always love to do is learn how to mix the cement, everything for the block and for the rock, and you know,
after a while you start calling it mud, because that's the old term, mud.
Yeah, just like a rope is not a rope, a rope is a line.
Well, when I first started laying rock, I was just 19. I was up in Pennsylvania, and I went up there to look after my grandparent. Well, my grandpa was bad sick, and the only job I could get was an apprentice stonemason. Uh-huh. Grandpa knew this old German guy, and he was actually from Germany. Mm-hmm. And about the only English I really understood him say was, muddy-o! He needed some more mud, you know.
Yeah.
And and he called us just a bunch of damn hippies. That's what he called us. You dumb hippies.
Yeah.
Us damn hippies were there working for him real hard, you know.
Yeah.
But so I still use the word muddy-o, you know. And
That would be cool stuff to that I could do plumbing. I can do anything with water, plumbing wise. Electrical I'm pretty good at. You know, I still have to call an electrician if it's too technical and stuff because I don't keep up with all the codes and all that stuff anymore. But
there's a code.
Yeah, there's supposed to be a code.
Oh,
well. But they've changed codes so much here in the last 3 or 4 years that's really hard to keep up with. And they're introducing new laws and stuff. And so I don't keep up with that stuff. And the electrician's supposed to. So
well, I hope some inspectors don't ever come look at my house. Because, you know, I learned most of my electrical wiring starting off with my solar.
Yeah,
just a piece at a time, but it's all working.
Yeah, we had a vendor come in the other day, and he had one of those electric pallet jacks, and he's bringing pop into the store, and he hit our second register, and so when he hit it and stuff, we lost two power outlets that ran the lottery system, and one of our conveyors on the first register, and all right, this place was wired up 44, 45 years ago. And so he's like, hey, man, you just call, you know, if you need an electrician, I got one. I can bring, you know, so-and-so in and stuff. And we're like, no, we don't work like that stuff. This is really old stuff. I'm going to call an actual electrician to have him come in and look at it. So I had the electrician come in. When the guy hit the counter and stuff, the electrical box, you know, there's conduit going under the floor. There were six wires in it.
Six wires?
Six strands. Oh. And they were all color-coded red. No other color but red. So you got six hots, six neutrals, and six grounds.
Or, all of them red.
Or three, or two hots, two neutrals, and two grounds. But they're all red-colored, so you don't know which one's which. And so we had to cut a hole into the bottom of the cabinet because we really didn't want to move. I mean, these things are like, 12, 15 foot long and 3 or 4 foot wide. And so, it's all metal. And so we didn't want to move that and the computer system, stuff like that. So we had to cut holes to see the junction boxes. And when the pop guy hit it and stuff, the electrical box over top the conduit that comes through the floor and stuff, he ruptured two of the lines. One hot, and we still don't know what the other one is because, you know, there's six wires. They're all red and stuff, but all the electric was running off one circuit. And so we was able to get all the computers and calculators and all that stuff back on it, since it was already on the same circuit to begin with. We was able to go to another receptacle, and so that fixed that. And then we get over to the conveyor belt, and he's like, I don't know if this is hot. So he started taking a little piece of wire, and it was hitting against the other, you know, wire. That's the only way. It didn't blow a breaker, you know. When it initially did it, it didn't blow a breaker. So, like, crap and stuff. If it blew a breaker, it'd been great.
Yeah.
And stuff. So, we had to dead short the thing and stuff. And when he dead shorted that thing, boom. You've never seen an electric ball of fire like this.
So, what did you do? Get extension cords out?
No, we finally found the two hots. We know which two are the two hots now. We found that out the hard way. But when he hit the register and stuff, he hit it so hard that it pulled one of the wires in two inside the conduit. Oh,
so he was shorting inside the...
Yeah, inside the conduit. We will never find out because we don't want to have to take both registers apart, you know, take all the wires out of it, rerun the wires and stuff.
No, that's
not good. That's a lot of work. And, you know, here we are. We're trying to do it right in the middle of business hour and, you know, getting into the business part of the day. And stuff, but we got everything running.
Well, that's the thing that scares me about electric when you get in complicated like that. It's like in here right now, we're, you know, trying to get on the air here, you know, and all of a sudden the board wasn't working. You know, Lloyd's spinning around in circles trying to figure out which button to push, you know, and one way in the corner back here, and that's got it going. But
yeah,
My little Ford Ranger out here, it got to where a fuse would blow if you put it in four-wheel drive. A fuse would blow. Well, when that fuse blowed, the turn signals didn't work. So I put a fuse back in it, and it'd go pretty good for a little while, and then it'd blow again. And I looked up, I bought the manual for it. The manual don't tell you nothing. But the little glove box manual says, well, the four-wheel drive switch, it's electric switch for it, and the turn signal were on the same fuse. Well, turn signals worked when it was working, and the four-wheel drive worked when it'd just go along, and all of a sudden it'd blow. I said, well, something else wrong here. And I talked to people, and they said, oh, well, you know, they don't know anything either. So I took the center of the dashboard out, and that's where all the basic wiring and the switches are. And I said, well, this is what I'm going to do. I'm either going to set this truck on fire or I'm going to fix it. Well, I ended up doing both. So I took a jumper wire and I stuck it in the fuse box that kept blowing. Well, I set the truck on fire and I seen which wire was burning. And I pulled that jumper back out. It was going to the air conditioner switch.
Oh, no.
There's nothing in the manual about, you know, that is on the same fuse as the turn signal and the four-wheel drive. Well, I didn't use the air conditioner anyway, so I cut that wire out and unplugged it underneath the hood, and I haven't blown a fuse since.
Well, that's cool. I mean,
but I had to set the truck on fire to find it.
Yeah. I actually, one of my buddies' truck, his caught on fire there a couple weeks ago and actually burned it up and everything. It's no more drivable no more, so...
I saw that yesterday morning going up the parkway towards Winchester. It was still dark, and I seen a truck that had been coming off of one of the ramps there. And I thought to myself, something looks funny about that. It had a glow to it, and it wasn't 2 minutes later, here comes a fire truck out of Winchester just to move in that direction. I said, that truck was on fire.
That's how another friend, he was just driving down the interstate, and kaboom, it was like fire. And I'm like, dude. And we got all about the same year model truck and stuff. So I'm like, oh, please don't. Whatever happened, don't let that bad karma or juju come over to me. And stuff. Because we literally, it's only just a year or two difference between all the years of our trucks and everything.
So whatever caused the problem could have been causing.
Yeah. And stuff. So I was just like, phew. Afraid to even scare or to drive mine anymore and stuff. Cause, I mean, it just.
Well, look at the old junk I've got, you know, and I'm every morning now, you know, it's a long drive for me from Cobb Hill out of that hollow over to. I leave about a quarter after five in the morning, and I get up there about 7 o'clock. I'm driving a $500 truck. The rear bumper fell off here a while back.
I was wondering, I was out there when we was out there talking before we came in here and stuff.
Well, I'm running 70 mile an hour, coming down the mountain parkway, make it all the way up Furnace Mountain, back through Watson Ridge, and I start down over the cliff behind my house on my new road, and I hear this thump, 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 and I go, what in the world is that? And I get out and look, and the rear bumper's like dragging the ground, and I go, no. You know, if that had come off running 70 mile an hour coming down the parkway, I'd have killed somebody, you know.
It'd been bad.
So, anyway, I got a 2x4 keeping the rear spring from coming through the bed. So, at some point this year, I got to take the bed off the truck. And I've got all the metal cut and everything ready. I got it all eyeballed how it's going to go back together. But I'm not going to put a bumper back on. I'm just going to put my re-hitch and back on it. You know, I don't need a bumper. But you never know with your vehicles, you know. And even brand new stuff, you don't know what you're getting.
Oh, no, not even more stuff. We was talking about that the other day and stuff. I was looking at, you know, maybe buying a new vehicle. No, I ain't got the money to buy a new vehicle, so no. I'm going to be buying used vehicles the rest of my life.
Somebody says, well, if your Ford Ranger breaks down, what are you going to do? I said, go out and buy another $500 truck.
Yeah.
But I've got a 95 T100 Toyota, and they're good little trucks, and this is a good one. I had a tie rod end went bad on it. They're obsolete now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking
a lot more stuff.
95 obsolete.
And stuff.
I ended up with one, but
that drive shaft for my mower, it's obsolete now.
Yeah.
And it's 25 years old, and I'm like, what?
Well, it's making me feel old.
Why's that?
Well, because 95, this seems like that was just yesterday, you know. It's obsolete. What's that make me, you know?
Almost dead.
Yeah. Well, I guess so, because it took me a year to get my new teeth. You know what I mean? So, they were obsolete, too, I guess.
But, see, what else can we talk about? Oh, have you ever built a PVC water heater?
A PVC water heater.
Yes.
Out of black plastic?
Yes.
Actually, years ago, we built one with a black steel barrel.
Black steel barrel.
When we lived on the river. Uh-huh. And we wrapped black plastic pipe around it.
Okay. I've never.
And we had it up on a platform, and during the day, it would heat up. We had spring water. It would run into it. We let it run real, real slow. Uh-huh. Just a trickle through it. And at the end of the day, us boys were up there building that first log house we built here in Kentucky. We was able to take good, warm showers.
Well, that's cool.
It never got scalding hot or anything, but it
Yeah, it was warm. It was good and warm. Cold.
But,
so.
But we just took, I think it was just half-inch black plastic pipe, uh-huh. and we just wrapped it around that steel drum,
uh-huh.
and the drum, we painted it black.
Uh-huh.
And it just absorbed enough heat during the day. Of course, it was cold. 57-degree water coming into it all the time, but we just let it run a trickle, just you know, and it would go through the plastic pipe and it would go into the barrel.
Uh-huh.
And it made that water. The first person that took a shower got a pretty good warm one,
mm-hmm.
and after that it got a little cooler, you know. But so we had to like fight each other to see who's going.
And say, well, what brought me to this and stuff is I've been seeing a lot of articles and stuff. Usually around fall, winter time stuff, you know, people start reading more. They get a little bit more downtime, so they can start on different projects and everything. And so this project I was reading about and stuff, it's fall time, getting close to winter. Everybody's got a little bit more time on their hands. And so they was talking about building PVC pipe, taking two-inch, inch-and-a-half, two-inch sewer pipe and capping them off and then running one pipe to the other pipe to the other pipe, and then putting this up on your roof and stuff, mounting it to your roof, and then having some kind of water pump system to where it could fill itself back up and then give you warm water and stuff, and you not have to have a fire or anything like that to heat your water. And that was really cool and stuff, but then you got to worrying about the stagnated water.
Well, you have to worry about it freezing too if you're somebody's near and not control
too.
It. And but you know, I just had my propane tank filled back up again today, and I'm thinking about different alternatives right now.
Really?
But now the old cooking stoves, a lot of the fancier cooking stoves, uh-huh. had an outfit that went in a firebox, and then there was a tank.
Yeah,
you know, and they would heat water, you know, and go into an old brass tank, you know, and
yeah, I was actually talking to one of my friends the other day and stuff. He's he's working on a cabin, and he says, Lloyd, he said, would you do all electric heat? Would you do gas heat, or you know, what would you do? And I said, well, I know me and Teresa, we have a two system heat and stuff where we have electric down to 32, and then it changes over to gas. I would change that just a little bit and have it down to 40 and stuff, because time it gets down to 32, it's cold.
And, oh, absolutely.
And so it's a lot harder to
heat everything back up.
To heat everything back up. So I would change it from 32 to 40 degrees. But I was like, this guy and stuff, he's got a lot of woods around his house. And I says, man, right there's your fuel source and stuff. Go get you one of these outside wood burners and stuff. I know several people that's got them. They all like them, especially in the wintertime, because it will just about run you out of the house because it is so warm.
But you still have to have electricity functioning for that.
You still have to have electricity, but it's a blower motor running, you know, blowing the heat onto the pipe or blowing it through ductwork and into the house. So it don't have to be a big
thing. Well, you could actually go solar on it too, and just have a low watt fan that just moving constantly. You'd have a coming in there.
And so he's like, man, I didn't even think about that. And I was like, you got space for it and stuff. You got a roof already. You got an outbuilding. You could put it inside that, you know, cut you some firewood, you know, have it seasoned a little bit, and then burn it. And the one that I like over in Jeffersonville and stuff, they fill it up once a day. They put five or six logs in it, and it burns.
Well, some of them are pretty good sized furnaces, you know.
And so they can heat their entire house and heat their hot water at the same time and stuff. And then they can turn their electric side off on their hot water and stuff, which is awesome and stuff, because that saves you a lot. you know, the appliances that cost the most to run inside your house is your hot water heater, your furnace, and stuff like that. So, you know, if you can, you know, take one or two or both of them off. You know,
well, you know, people need to get conservative, too. They're not, you know, everybody just wants to jump in and take the hottest shower they can take every single day, you know. And my hot water heater, you know, I like being clean. But I've got it turned down on what they call vacation. It's propane. And that water will scald you.
Really? You know? That's not vacation there, Paul.
But it's a triple line stainless steel tank.
Oh, okay.
You know, it was an expensive tank to begin with. But sometimes you have to invest money in getting the quality stuff, too. So it'll work the best.
Yeah. And so, you know, I was talking to this friend of mine stuff. And he's like, you know, I won't have to check the outside wood burner system. I said, man, I would. I mean, you're going to be cutting these trees down to help, you know, clear some land anyway. You might as well just cut it down and
well, my neighbor's got one up there on top of the Sally Ann Mountain. That great big house stands up there. And that's what he heats it with. And it's a huge house. It's a real nice outfit. You know, he's got it hooked up and working just fine.
And stuff. You know, over at Camargo Elementary and stuff, they put in a new geothermal system over there and stuff. And they, I don't know how many holes they had to drill over there, but it was a lot. They was over drilling for weeks.
We have my friends Jack and Teresa over there on Red River. They got geothermal in their house. And that's all they've heated with for years.
Man, I've always, you know, especially in my greenhouses, I always wanted to do the poor man's geothermal unit, where you dig down as far as you can, put a piece of pipe in it, you know, let the water come up, and then put your pump and everything in, and then let the water, you know, have some kind of fan system to put. It's easier to warm up 58 degree air than it is to
absolutely warm
up 32 degree.
Well, that's the whole principle of the geothermal, is that you're not heating it from zero outside to
To you know, 70 inside and everything. And then in the summertime, it's a lot easier to cool 58 degree air than it is to cool 95 degree air.
Well, we were talking about heating houses today. You know, the guy on the job up there, you know, he was saying these old houses, you know, how they keep them warm with just fireplaces. I said, well, you know, you got to think 250 years ago, Kentucky had more temperate winters. Yeah. You know, they weren't still as bad, but people had furniture back then. They had a lot of stuffing in it, whether it was horsehair or whatever, you know, overstuffed furniture, heavy curtains, heavy carpets, and all that stuff during the day absorbs heat. And then at night when the fires have died down, that radiates the heat back into the house. Modern furniture isn't like that. It's all like vinyl and plastic and, you know, and just old hardwood or hard plastic seats. There's nothing there to absorb heat.
And that's a really good point and stuff, is insulate your house, and everything inside your house acts like an insulator too.
Right, yeah. And you got to realize too, people 250 years ago were more acclimated to the cooler weather too. They weren't.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They weren't used to going into a house that was 80 degrees.
And stuff. You know, on the cooling side of it, I know up in New York City and stuff, these big tall skyscrapers and everything, they use airflow to help cool the buildings and stuff. They made airflow or air shafts inside the buildings and everything. So the cool air from the ground,
the geothermal on that
and stuff, would flow throughout the building to help cool the
building.
Well,
see, that's the same principle as heating 57 degrees up to 70.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if it's 90 outside and you got 57 degrees coming up out of the ground, all you do is put a fan on it and blow it around. You know, it's gonna.
And so they made these air shafts inside the buildings and stuff to help cool them down and everything, especially in the summertime. Now, in the wintertime, then they had like a boiler system and stuff, but they was using the same air, pushing it up, and then the hot air would go out throughout the building and stuff. So that
I'm still wanting to build me an air conditioner. You know, that,
I have your coil over in my barn.
That's for like a swamp cooler type outfit. Yeah, I've thought about that little creek that comes down in behind my shop. That's cool air all year round. It never sees sunlight. That's for two spots my doggy likes to go lay. You know, she knows the coolest places. And I was thinking, you know, fire that old backhoe up one day if I get everything together, and dig a trench from that creek over to my house. And lay some insulated ductwork in there, and have a fan just pulling air, you know, because I've got a solar, you know, put a screen over so critters won't climb in there, and have that come up in the, under my bedroom floor.
Oh, that would be cool.
Because that water, you know, that's 57 degree water, and it doesn't have a chance to heat up during the day. In the summer, it comes down, it's a real steep little hollow. It runs on just slate rock all the way down through there.
You might be onto something there, Paul.
I thought about just ducking it over, you know, and it wouldn't take much of a low wattage fan as long as the air is a constant movement.
Yeah, and you wouldn't have stale air because you'd have that fan blowing all the time. Yeah,
and, you know, I run a fan in my bedroom in the summer, but then I listen to that fan all night.
Yeah.
You know, and you get used to it after a while. But the way I was thinking about doing this, I wouldn't be hearing a fan run either. It'd just be nice, cool air coming in. Of course, all the cats and the dog and everybody would be laying around on top of the vent, you know. If I had to boot them out, but I've really contemplated this, you know.
I would have already fired that backhoe up.
Well, I'm still putting all the pieces together.
But
I need to start collecting more garbage, you know, until I can build something with.
Yeah, you talk about that. I had to take two loads of scrap metal off the other day. Three loads of scrap metal off the other day. And it's cheap now. It's just about not worth fooling with. And I'm like, all right, I've got my pile cleaned up. Yeah, everything looks good. We've got everything weed-eated and stuff. It don't look like a eyesore over here no more. The very next day.
You needed a piece of it.
No. That stuff. We've been cleaning out several houses here lately. And we picked up a 16-foot trailer load of scrap metal out of all these houses that we've been cleaning up. So, because we save it. If it's got metal in it, and it's, you know, I don't know what the percentage that we have. If it's got a lot of metal in it, we go ahead and put it in a scrap pile.
Yeah.
And then we'll take it back to the farm and sort it out when we get time. And then there's so much metal that goes to the landfills and everything. And there's a recycling center in Camargo now. So,
yeah.
There's one in Winchester. There's so two or three in Winchester.
Well, I used to always go to Stuff's, you know.
And so you got all these you might as well get paid. To take your metal to the recycling center. And I mean, it's literally right there in Camargo. It's not that hard. And so we you know, I'm like, hey, I don't have to do no more, you know, keeping all this metal. I'll be darned. We went and picked up that 16-foot trailer load. Guess what? I got a pile again. We got to go back in there and stuff. I gave the my farm hand the other day, I gave him a magnet. And I said, now put it into two different piles, aluminum
and
metal. And then
I separate all my stuff.
And so he you know, hands me my magnet back. And so he said, here you go. There was only one piece of aluminum in there. And I was like, okay. And stuff. I go back there and stuff. And all the door framing for the outdoor, the storm doors, they're all aluminum. So
cast aluminum.
And so I have to sort them back out and stuff. But, you know, he did a pretty good job.
Well, years back when I was still working with Dave on these old log houses, I was out in Arizona, and he calls me. And he said, when are you coming home? I said, you know, my mother had been ill, so I was staying there with her for quite a bit. I said, well, I'll be home in a couple of weeks. He says, his wife, Mary, out there in Winchester, well, she's got a water tank in her. There's an old pump house there. It's a big farm, you know. The place is ancient. And there's an old water tank down there she wants you to take out. I said, sure, I'll take that out when I get back, you know. And I get back there. This water tank holds 20,000 gallons of water. It was a railroad tanker.
Oh, wow.
And they had, when they dug the cellar for this well house or spring house or whatever you wanted to call it, they took mules and drug this thing. There used to be a railroad down behind there. And they drug this thing over there and they rolled it down into the cellar. And then they built the building around it.
Oh, okay.
Well, Well, we had to take acetylene torch and cut this thing out of there, and he had this young Mexican fellow, didn't understand very good English, but he helped me, and he worked hard. And my old time truck, we hauled 4 truckloads of that stuff out of there. It was all that truck could haul. Well, they paid us by the hour to do it, and then they told us we could have the scrap.
Yeah.
Well, the scrap brought, I think it was $1,800. And it was a job getting it out of there because we had to cut it in little squares and pack it up the steps. And then plus it had the old pump. It had everything in there. It was heavy. And when I got all the money from the thing,
you actually come out ahead with the metal.
Alfredo was the Mexican fellow. I handed him half the money.
Uh-huh.
He goes, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, you did half the work."
Uh-huh.
He didn't think I was going to give him any of the money. You know, I was going to keep it all. He said, "Oh, you know, that's paying my rent. That's paying." He was tickled a bit.
Back in the day, you could actually make some money off scrap and
Well,
stuff,
the thing is, I thought I was just going to go down there and unbolt some little, 140-pound water tank and pack it up steps. You know, it's like, uh-oh.
20,000 gallons still.
And it was still full of nasty old water. They'd pumped it out of a pond.
Oh, okay.
You know, and then they used the water for irrigate around the farm with, you know. They had lines running everywhere, but
I can't remember. I think it's over in Estill County and stuff. A guy has a reservoir built and stuff, and he has one trough that goes to the greenhouse, and one trough that goes to the house, and one trough that goes to the garage, and wherever he needs electric and stuff, you know, or he has a paddle wheel set up to produce power or run machinery or that stuff. And that's here close. I can't remember the fellow's name, but that's here, Estill County or Wolf County or something like that.
Mm.
And I'd seen pictures of it from a friend of mine, and it was just really cool how he had these troughs going to different places and stuff, and either produced electric or it turned a pulley and stuff, and it ran, a drill or, a homemade drill or something other and stuff. So,
well, some of them old machine shops, there was one up there in Virginia, an old farm that us boys lived on before we came to Kentucky, and it had a paddle wheel out back of this old machine shop. Mm-hmm. Of course, this was all rotted down and tore up, but there was a spring branch, and that spring produced enough water at one time that it turned this paddle wheel real slowly. Uh-huh. But it went in, and it had a shaft through the ceiling of the machine shop. It had those big belt pulleys on it. And they could hook this one belt over, and they could run their lathe, or they could run the drill, or they could run...
Talking about that and stuff, so Trace and I and Bub, we went to Columbus last weekend. And so we went to the Ohio History Museum on Friday, and that was okay. And then Saturday we went to Columbus Zoo, and that's one of the oldest, I think the second oldest zoo in the U.S.
Oh, really?
And it's huge. We walked about 5 miles that day and seen, all the animals and everything. And then Sunday we was coming home, but we've got this thing now where we do not like to take the interstates. We all do back road driving.
I hate interstates.
And so back road driving stuff, Teresa, we're sitting there eating breakfast and everything. She goes, "Well, we could drive, just drive home and be home earlier, or we can find something along the way." And I said, "Hey, wait a minute, there's a a grist mill somewhere around us that I've seen on Facebook, and it's off one of the back roads and everything." And so we got to searching on Google and everything, and come to find out it was just like 10 minutes outside of Dayton, and Dayton was on was the other direction from where we's heading to. But we got the GPS out and stuff, said, "Hey, we only got to drive 30 minutes out of our way."
It was an operating mill?
It was an operating mill to this day. It was built in 1852 or
they're awesome watching a big paddle wheel go around.
And it still had three ways of water could get to it. And then it had a covered bridge. It used to be a transportation bridge and stuff, but they've since closed it down and made it just a pedestrian bridge. And so you could take pictures of this wheel still turning and everything. And so, I was asked, they steel mill corn there for cornbread and stuff like that. But they have not been able to produce anything here lately because they can't get the cloth bags that they put the meal
sure
in.
Sure enough.
Sure enough and stuff. So you got this meal that's lasted, you know, 100 and some years.
You can't get a bag.
And can't get a cloth bag or a paper bag, whatever kind of bag use to put the cornmeal in and stuff. They can't get them. And so the wheel's still sitting there turning. You can still see it, and you can still see all the workings and everything. But there's no corn going into the mill because they can't get the bag to put the cornmeal into.
Well, years back when I rebuilt up in Bourbon County, rebuilt Larry Redmond's old log houses, when we tore the old houses down, tore the old foundations up, we found three stone millstones.
Oh, really?
And underneath the foundation of the house.
Yeah.
And the house was built there in the late 1700s, but it was right off I can't think of the name of that, Hinkston Creek. Yeah. And, you know, that's why they called it Millersburg.
Okay.
They had every kind of mill. They had sawmills there. Mm-hmm. They had grist mills there. Yeah, yeah, but we found these old millstones, you know.
There used to be one up there on Hardick's Creek, down from Vaughn's Mill. It's Vaughn's Mill.
Yeah.
And stuff, and that's what it was.
Well, that's Vaughn's Mill, yeah.
And so it was Vaughn's Mill. There's a church there now and several houses through there and an old out-of-business grocery store stuff. But at one time, I don't know if you can still see it or if the floods have finally washed it away, but you can still see the steel pipe in the creek and stuff there where the building used to sit and stuff, where the water would come down and it had it, you know, had a paddle wheel and everything. And that pipe would deliver water to the mill.
I've never noticed it. I go through there all the time.
But that's how Vaughn's Mill got its name, was from the old mill that sat there on the creek bed. And stuff. I love going to those old mills and stuff.
Well, I just love the history of it, you know. And you people know, people had to work for what they got back then. Not only did they have to work hard to operate that mill, but they had to build the thing out of just materials they found right there. Yeah. You know, they had to go hew the timbers out. You know, they had to cut the stone out, you know, to do the grinding with. You know, they had to set up a blacksmith shop to forge all the metal that they used in it, you know. I mean, people had to work back then. Now they get down to Wally's World and just buy it and take it home, plug it in.
Yeah, and we're a throwaway society, too. Oh,
yeah.
Where once it breaks, you just throw it away, go get you another one and stuff. And you know, I have a buddy that works for an appliance repair service and stuff, and he's like, Lloyd, don't ever throw nothing away because everything.
Well, I don't throw anything away. You come down and look around.
Just about everything could be fixed. So if they make parts, some parts are more pricey than others and stuff. But he's like, we can get the parts, and this is true because I had a gas cook stove the other day. You know, I would have had to throw it away if I could not find the glass that goes in the door. And so I ordered it from one company. It comes in. It was shattered. So I have to call Terry. Terry, hey, I need glass for this thing. He said, give me the model number and all this. We got it. And it was actually cheaper to get it through him than it was through the company I was going through. And so I was able to save that cook stove and stuff just because, you know, somebody was shattered glass in it and everything. And so that was the first time I ever put glass into a cook stove, but it works. I mean, it did a good job.
Well, you know, I'm bad for, you know, if something breaks, you know, and it looks like it's going to be too difficult to fix. Yeah. I'll go get something else too, but I usually get something that somebody else has thrown away easier to fix.
Yeah.
But as far as going and buying brand new stuff, like this old truck, I only paid $500 for it.
Yeah.
Well, if it breaks, I've got my other $500 truck that I just put a tie rod end on. But I'm never going to go to the bank to buy another truck again.
I think them days are over. You know, Ford came out with one that costed $90,000 couple years ago. I just can't wrap my head around
that. Can you imagine, you know?
You know, stuff. It better be made out of gold. So.
Yeah. Well, I've still got, the last time I went to the bank to borrow money to buy a truck, it was my 96 Ford Ton F-350, and I've still got it. I've had it for 23 years. You know, I used it the other day. It started right up.
I'm a fan of the older vehicles myself. My farm truck.
Well, they're easier to work on.
My farm truck is 20 some years old. My Jeep is 20 some years old. and stuff. You know, all except for one tractor's 15 years old, and the rest of them are 20 some years old.
Well, everything that age and older, you can work on them.
Yeah,
you can crawl underneath the hood and fix things. You know, even if something electrical goes wrong, you can still bypass it somehow. Mm-hmm. Some of this newer stuff, you can't. Even this little Ford Ranger out here, you know, like I said,
we talk about technology all the time, stuff. And I have an iPad sitting right here, and I got an iPhone on my side and stuff. And you know, it's cool to have that stuff because.
I've got a flip phone.
Well, you got a flip, but I can get on the internet and look up schematics right there in the barn.
I know that's handy.
And so if I'm working on a tractor or working on a piece of machinery stuff and I don't understand how it was put together originally and stuff, I can get online and find the schematics for it or get on a blog and say, oh, okay, this is how they fix this and stuff.
Well, I tried getting internet down to Holland. Yeah. And I called the woman up, you know, and they sent me a little card in the mail saying, you know, call us. And I call her and I tell her how I live. Yeah. I'm off the grid. And she goes, well, that's no problem. You know, we'll put a satellite dish, you know, and do wireless internet for you.
Uh-huh.
And so they set me up an appointment for a guy who was going to come look at it.
Yeah.
So I took a day off work. Well, the guy's lost. I'm driving up on the mountain and I'm finally running him down and I got him to drive over the cliff behind my house, which kind of scared him a little bit. But the first thing he does when he gets down there, he goes, well, where's your power at? You know, and I pointed to my solar panels. He goes, no, how does your electric come in? I pointed to my solar panels, you know. He goes, no, we have to have poles. I said, I don't have poles. I said, all my wires are buried underground from my solar panels.
Yeah.
Hell, no, we have to have poles to run our cable on. I said, what cable? Well, we have to have a cable to run your internet. I said, no, this is supposed to be wireless internet. And he said, oh, we don't offer that.
Yeah.
I said, well, you should talk to your salespeople
that
are selling me wireless internet.
Yeah.
So I said, listen, buddy, I tell you what, there's another road out of here going down the other way. I said, I don't need internet that bad. But, you know, I thought about how handy it would be to be able to look stuff up, you know, and order things online. And I said, well, I'm done without it. I can do without it.
Yeah.
Again, so.
All right, Paul, people, we
out of time already?
Yeah, we're out of time. We overtime just a little bit. Well, that's all right, though.
Yeah.
We've had a fun discussion.
Well, Jesse overtimes his show all the time, so.
That's all right. So. Yeah. It's all good.
It's all good.
And stuff. So, you know, thank everybody for listening and stuff. I hope everybody has a blessed weekend, a blessed work week ahead.
Yes, sir.
And you got anything else to add?
Well, this weekend's going to go by quick between laying bricks and cutting firewood, and I think I'll make a big pot of spaghetti on Sunday and try my little cooking stove out. And
there you go.
And then get back up 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, go back to laying rocks again.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Get her done.
Uh-huh. And everybody wish him happy birthday next week and everything.
Yeah, I'm going to be 28, I think, or is it 29?
71? All right, guys. Everybody have a great and wonderful week, and we'll catch you here next weekend. So long. Love a lot of doo-doo.